This week, a federal judge dismissed a lawsuit connected to the anthrax attacks of 2001. In that lawsuit, bioweapons scientist Stephen Hatfill accused a New York Times columnist of implying that Hatfill was involved with those mailings. 3 years into the investigation of the attacks, Stephen Hatfill remains in a state of limbo. Since Attorney General John Ashcroft called him a person of interest, the FBI has searched his apartment more than once, and Hatfill has been under routine surveillance. He has not been indicted. He has also not been cleared. The FBI has said it still hopes that high-tech forensics will help them find the attacker, but sources familiar with some of the forensic work say progress appears to be slow. NPR's David Kestenbaum reports.
Robert Stevens, a photojournalist in Florida, was the first of five people to die, and samples of anthrax bacteria taken from his body were quickly sent for DNA analysis. The hope was that scientists could match it with anthrax from a particular laboratory, pinpointing where it had been prepared. And the research did give investigators one big clue. The anthrax turned out to be the Ames strain, which was first isolated from a cow in Texas, but then passed on to the nation's main biodefense lab in Maryland and shared with perhaps a dozen other facilities. Sources tell NPR that the research, while technically impressive, has not narrowed the field any further than that. The FBI has been using other forensic techniques. One aims to study the atoms in the spores to see if they hold a kind of geographical fingerprint. When the spores were grown, they would have taken up water from their environment. Water contains hydrogen and oxygen atoms. It turns out that these atoms come in heavier and lighter varieties called isotopes. And if you take the water coming out of your faucet, the fraction of heavy and light atoms in the water may be slightly different from those in a sink in another part of the U.S. It all has to do with how clouds pick up water from the ocean, then rain out the heavier isotopes first. Jim Elringer is a biologist at the University of Utah and a leading expert on the technique. Elringer would not say whether he was working on forensics for the anthrax case, but sources close to the investigation confirm that he is. Elringer did agree to talk about his published work. In a paper last year, Elringer and colleagues, one of whom works at the CIA, showed they could use the technique to trace the geographical origins of spores, spores similar to anthrax.
We grew microbes on the East Coast, central U.S., southern U.S., Intermountain West. And indeed, we could find a very tight association between the isotope ratio of the microbe and the isotope ratio of the water in which that microbe was cultured.
Elringer is now creating a map showing how the isotope ratios of water vary around the United States. His team sent out vials asking people to fill them up with tap water and mail them back. They now have collected several thousand samples. The map so far shows water in the Northeast looks different from water in the Southeast or Northwest. He says they never expected to be able to do more than narrow things down to a large area.
I think it's quite useful as a forensic tool in excluding some regions as to where a material might have originated from. But from a highly specific application, it probably is somewhat limited because you can't distinguish, let's say, between laboratories in the same city. But from one state to the next, it's probably much more useful at that point.
Two experts say the technique has other limitations. Isotope ratios vary with the seasons, and if the person growing the anthrax spores had used bottled water, all bets are off. The FBI may be making progress with its other forensic studies, but indications are the work has been slow. One clue comes from a court case, another lawsuit brought by Stephen Hatfill, this one alleging the government leaked information about him to the press. The Department of Justice has repeatedly asked for the proceedings to be put on hold, citing in part ongoing forensic work. But in October, the judge, after reviewing secret government documents, said he didn't think much would be resolved in the coming months. So where does all this leave Stephen Hatfill? The FBI seems less interested in him. Hatfill's associates say he is no longer being tailed when he leaves the apartment. And last year, the head of the FBI's Washington field office told reporters he regretted that the investigation had been beset by leaks. He said he did not support naming anyone as part of an ongoing investigation. The country's top terrorism official at the time of the attacks also has reservations about how things are being handled. Richard Clark was President Bush's counterterrorism chief.
I think the whole concept of an attorney general saying that someone is a person of interest and then not indicting them, I think is a real abuse of power. If you have the ability to indict them, fine, indict them. If you don't, shut up about them.
And Clark says the lack of apparent progress in the case is not encouraging.
If it hasn't been solved by now, I suspect it means that the FBI has been unable to develop evidence that they can use in court. And so maybe it will never be solved.
The FBI declined to comment for this story. David Kestenbaum, NPR News, Washington.